called?
What's up? Welcome to another episode of Snacks Packs. This episode is brought to you by the Foundation to Legalize Dogfighting. I feel like every citizen should have their own airplane, and you should be able to fly around in the sky and fight each other.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. In fact, planes should be government mandated.
Yeah, you should, at birth, you're issued the latest gen of fighter jets, and then you just grow up in that.
Wow,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, I'm talking...
I feel like everyone should be on the same playing field.
I want 11-year-olds.
I'm flying my goddamn F-14 around. Yeah. I guess I'd be flying an F-18 or maybe an F-15 around, and then these fucking Zoomers get an F-35 that can shoot me down over the horizon. Yeah. Give me one.
We're going to make it generational. So whatever was the latest and greatest in your generation, that's what you get. So we've got like 80-year-old
that's crazy.
Dudes.
Puttering around in their little P-51s.
Yeah. Oh,
our planes can't even go slow enough to shoot those things down.
Right? Goddamn. I don't think I told you this, but I was so busy in December that I forgot to pay my car payment.
Oh.
Yeah, I like was at work the other day and I got a call from
Cuz you have to like do it manually.
Yeah. Yeah, and I got a call from my bank and I missed it, and then I was like, "Oh, what is this?" And then I was like a little voicemail. I was like, "We're calling you from TTC Boo." And I was like, "Oh, what's this about?" So I got on my online banking and looked at it, and it was like first delinquent notice, second delinquent notice, third delinquent notice. And I was like, "Oh." And they
didn't
were
get text or nothing about it?
Well, they were like, "We try to contact you by mail." And I was like, "I don't fucking check my mailbox, bro. What are you talking about?" And
like, did our carrier pigeon not arrive?
Yeah. Like, did the smoke signals not get to you in time?
The light towers?
Yeah. So I called the guy and I was like, "I could have swore I paid it in December." And he was like, "Nah, it looks like you didn't." I was like, "Fuck." I was like, "All right, well, I'll just pay December and January right now." And he was like, "Okay, sounds good." And then cool. I got to take, I was like, too easy. Got it taken care of.
You want to know what's going on in my life?
Yeah, of course.
I don't remember if we talked about this, but last Tuesday, I did not work. Last Wednesday, last time we recorded, I wasn't working.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we did.
Because my work laptop was out. It was broken. And they said they were going to overnight me a new one, right? And then it got caught in the Fresno weather. So it didn't overnight the night they said.
Nice.
And then it went to Memphis.
Interesting.
It went to Memphis, and then it got stuck in weather there.
Hell yeah.
So this thing that said it was supposed to be there, I think it's, I was supposed to have this in my hand on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And this, with the Memphis thing, they were like, "I don't know, bro." And so it eventually arrived this Tuesday, this week. The laptop was broken.
Nice.
The IT department did not image it correctly. It had not updated it for our new system, so it did not work.
Hell
so
yeah.
That took me the whole day to figure out. So I tell them. They're like, "Oh, shit."
Whoopsie.
"We shitted." So they're like, "Sorry, we'll get you a new one." That's today. Today I get the tracking. They didn't overnight it.
Dude, hell yeah.
So it's not going to be here until next Tuesday.
That's incredible.
Which means the last day that I worked was the 12th of January, and I will not work again until the 31st.
That's incredible. That's
free and paid.
Dude. That's so
free
awesome.
And paid.
God, I wish I had that problem. I had such a bad fucking
day. The thing
day.
Is, it kind of sucked for a lot of it because I, like, for a big portion of it, I basically woke up every day. I had to go to bed and wake up every day like I was going to go to work, like the laptop was going to arrive.
Yeah.
And. But now I know it won't be here till Tuesday. I'm like, sick, bro. I don't have to work fucking tomorrow. And I thought I spent all day today thinking it was Thursday today. It's Wednesday.
Nice.
I was like, so I got fucking 3 fucking work days that I know I won't have to work and go do something fun. So I'm going to go see that new Yorgos Lanthimos movie tonight. Tomorrow.
The new what?
It's called Poor Thing.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, the director is Yorgos Lanthimos, and I love him dearly.
Yeah.
He's the one who did Killing of a Sacred Deer, and The Lobster, Dogtooth. Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, I've seen previews for this. It looks really fucking good.
I don't know anything about it. It just says Yorgos Lanthimos and Emma Stone, and I was like, I'm there.
Yeah, done.
Because they did The Favorite together, and that movie rocked.
Ain't gotta fucking tell me twice. Nope. I don't think I've watched anything, like, good.
I haven't been watching a lot of movies. I've been reading a lot.
I watched this fucking movie.
I've finished four books already.
In the title. Nice. Hell yeah. I'm still reading Snow Crash.
But you finished Termination Shock.
Yeah, I finished Termination Shock.
Did you like it?
It was really good. You liked
the book overall.
Yeah, overall I did like the book, yeah.
Fucking it.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
I thought it was a good wreck. I thought it was.
No, it was, like I said, in the beginning, I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna, you know, this is not really keeping my attention. And then it got, like, you know, it picked up, it got better, and I very much enjoyed it, so... I'm reading, dude, so I'm listening to fucking Snow Crash right now, and I don't know when it was recorded, because it's, like, very, like he's talking through an old microphone, and it's, like, legible, and it kind of goes with the vibe or whatever, but, like...
I guess the original book was 92.
Yeah, so it sounds like he's talking through an old microphone, and then there's, like, random times where you'll get, like... clear audio, so it'll be something like, and then he did this and that, and then he did this, and then he went over here, and I was like, okay, as you guys have to go
really weird.
Yeah, you guys have to go re-record that part or something like that. Like, I don't understand what the deal is here. And it's not to the point where I'm like, oh, I need to you know, I'm not gonna finish listening to this book. Like, it's still good, it's still engaging. I was just like, I'm really curious of the creative decision to, because, like, they had to have had good microphones, even if it was recorded way back when. They had to have good microphones that didn't sound like, you know, you're fucking talking through a record player. You know,
that is really weird.
Yeah, I don't understand. And I tried to, like, look it up when it was recorded, and I couldn't really find anything on it. So, I don't know, something said, I saw something that referenced it being recorded in 2002, and I was like, no way, bro. I was like, that's modern technology at that point. There's no way you're recording on a fucking beater microphone.
This is, I'm just kind of looking around, checking Reddit comments. No one's really mentioning anything about the quality of the audiobook.
That's insane, because it is noticeably different than any of the other books I've read on Audible or I've listened to on Audible. It is like I wonder if I can even play it for you and you can see, like, if I can just rewind 30 seconds so I don't only I have 5 hours left of this book.
Holy shit, really?
Marla goes with her. She gets no privacy at all. The only problem is...
Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that compared to, like, let me just fucking whip
that sounds
up.
Like an old VHS tape.
Yeah, so...
This is Audible.
Nope, not that one.
Recorded books and one...
Shut up, bitch.
Roke, my betrayer, sits in the corner. He was my friend.
And that's how it's usually recorded. So, like, noticeable difference.
That is weird.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I have no idea why it sounds like it's, you know, being recorded on fucking tape or something. So.
I mean, recording aside, first I want to talk about Termination Shock.
Okay.
Did you think the ending was cool? Did you like it?
Yeah. It's so weird.
I thought it came together so nice.
Yeah,
I didn't think forever. I was like, what's this guy with the stick got to do with anything?
Dude, that's what I was thinking. I was like, how are these stories going to, like,
I'm like, you've been talking
paths?
About this guy forever.
Yeah, I was like, he's, like, a key part of the book. I was like, I don't understand how
It took forever for them to connect that guy. Yeah.
I don't understand how these stories are going to intertwine, but, you know, by
I love
means.
That about Neal Stephenson. He does that a lot. I fucking love it.
Really
I
fucking threw me for a loop. I was like,
when they come together
shit.
And you're like, well, fucking A. And it's crazy because the way he does it, it made me feel really bad that he died.
Yeah, because it's like he's not...
I was like, dang!
He's not a bad guy. He's not a bad guy at all. He's just, like, working...
That's why I think it's really cool the way Neal Stephenson wrote that guy, because I was like, he doesn't even make India seem like a bad guy in, like, any part of that, you know?
They're just doing what you know, a world power would probably do in this scenario if their livelihood is being threatened.
And I loved the depiction. This is why I want to talk about this. I loved his depiction of India as now like a global power.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or at least a regional plus superpower. And meddling with geopolitical affairs. And then this, remember we talked about just a few weeks ago, the fucking Indian assassination attempts. I think they were Khalistanis. Or, yeah, like, advocates. Dude, I was like, wow, Neil kind of called that shit. He was like, that was good. Dude, that was real good.
Yeah, a fucking, what a call it was, too. Because, like, I don't know, I like the book because there was really... You know, one of the reasons there was really just no, there was no bad guy, and it was like, oh, look at this person we're fighting. It was like, it's everybody trying to save themselves slash the world, and it is a realistic representation of what would probably happen if somebody did what TR did. Like if
I mean, yeah, yes.
If you're if you're drastically,
like, TR would definitely be getting fucking heavy hitters in his yard.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, like the best of the best fucking killers rolling up to that Grant.
As soon as the rest of the world finds out that the government's not gonna do anything about it, they're like, oh
yeah, we're gonna do it. Yeah, we might as well. But you're like drastically changing the climate in other parts of the world, even though it's like kind of better for where you are, but they're worried about the monsoon season not coming in, and
That fucking chemical EMP, that was really goddamn
crazy.
Cool.
Crazy.
I was like, whoa,
crazy,
Neil,
dude.
You're onto some weird shit. Is that, I was like, I went and Googled it. I was like, they got chemical EMPs?
Can Is that a real thing?
You know? that seems nuts.
Yeah,
no one's ever really made what he described. I'm like, but someone probably will.
Dude, 100%. As soon as you fucking put that in the ether, bro, it's in someone's mind. And they're like, some kid is going to read this book and then he's going to grow up to be
Raytheon.
Yeah, Raytheon. And he's gonna be like, I have a great idea. He's like, hold on. Yeah, I have a good idea. You guys are going to think I'm crazy, but it's a real good.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, that shit was really cool. And I just love how, like, all the future stuff is so realistic, like how the city, how they adapted, I think, Houston to hurricanes.
Yeah, and floodwaters.
Or like,
and shit
like
it
would just make the highways flip around. Yeah. I'm like, it's so American. God, we would do that. Yeah. We would.
We just raise them up higher. And it's like
instead of living somewhere else.
Yeah, no, it's like, we're not, this is, especially like Texas, bro. Like, this is our home. We're going to let some pussy tsunami come in here and fucking get us out of our home.
We're like, not. We should reduce car dependency, and they're like, we're gonna
bigger highways? Question mark? Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Bigger and taller, more concrete.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, like, instead of them being like, well, we need to come up with a way to like try to, you know, essentially they did come up with a way to cool down the climate, but like before that, they were like, instead of coming up for a way to cool the climate, how about you just all wear suits that have exhaust fans outside of them and walk around and cool yourself with those suits?
Because that sucks, bro.
So I was like, that is the worst thing I've ever heard. That's the worst option. The only option.
But also those
more
suits
bad. Yeah. Those suits absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I also really like, it's the small details that he really gets me on. The RV class of people that develops because of the climate change nature of, like, being removed from their homes so often. I was like, and that, it's really interesting because America owns over half of all the RVs in the whole world.
That's not America surprising.
Alone. This is RV fucking
This is
central.
RV country,
this
baby!
This is RV land!
Hashtag van life.
I was like, man, he's dead on with it. Like, all those little things like that. I'm like, God, that's good. Or they're like the COVID apps. Also, one of the details that really bummed me out, he's like COVID 21 and 23.
I was like, oh my God. I was like, there's more.
Please stop.
Please. I was like,
no.
Yeah, we can't do it again. We can't.
We honestly, though, we never would. After the last, with all the people alive who lived COVID, we would never do it the same way.
No, absolutely.
They
not.
Won't.
Dude,
you will never jam us in the fucking homes again. I'm serious.
No.
It would have to be like a kills 1 in 4 people kind of thing.
Yeah, like no a fucking cure. Plague. Like a fucking plague.
Then everyone would be like, all right, I'll stay in my house.
Okay, but there would still be like a good amount of people that are like, you're not going to keep me in my fucking home. It's
they'll
natural
die
selection. Yeah. Die as soon as they leave their house. As soon as they leave their house. But yeah, I thought it was a fucking great, great.
Yeah, it's detail rich. It's such a real world, and all the stuff that he describes is gonna happen. Like the India heat waves, and then fucking sulfur in the atmosphere thing. It's been in like 4 books now. Like everyone's like, yeah, they're gonna do
it. It's gonna happen
because India has been identified as like where it's gonna be the hottest, and they have like. They have so many fucking people there. Dude, it's so hot, and it's gonna, and climate change like is making it so that the air can get hotter even more and more, and so like it really will just get so hot that everyone would just die. Isn't that unimaginable?
What a worse fate than just getting so hot you die is.
It would just be there's no relief, nowhere to go, nothing, because the power grid would fail and then it's over. You know what I mean? And then, holy shit! Even that is literally if it was so hot, like. You like a body of water would get too hot to be warm in.
I that's not a future I want to live in. I'm sorry. I'll kill myself if that happens. I'll fucking kill myself.
Just wear the suit, pussy.
Dude, right? Walk around in my suit.
Get your Daft Punk helmet on. We got to go to the grocery store.
I guess that's fair. I was saying,
you have a fucking 12 gauge strapped to your thigh,
Yes, sir.
I want to survive it. I'm a warrior. Yeah. I'm ready for the Mad Max world.
I guess in like a Mad Max fucking, like we're in a.
It's not going to ever be Mad Max bad, but it's going to be hard and weird, and I'm ready for it.
Hard and weird.
Our generation's Dust Bowl.
Title of my sex tape, dude. Hard and weird, bro.
Hard and weird.
I guess, yeah. I would. We could start a war party. Like if it was just like if I like didn't have like you or anyone else and it was just me, I'd be like, I don't know if I'm gonna do this,
dude. We'd be fine.
We'd be good to go. I think we'd be okay.
We'd be fine. I could arm everyone down to our smallest children.
Yeah, that's very true. We'll keep the podcast going in these times as well. So, the content
I'm gonna become a ham radio. Yeah. I'll also become a ham radio expert just so we can broadcast.
Yeah,
broadcast the podcast.
Yeah, the content might change a little bit, but we'll keep the podcast going. In the event of apocalypse, don't worry.
Yeah, absolutely, gang. We'll go around. And we'll do kind of like was it Last of Us or The Walking Dead style? We'll just spray paint the radio station.
Yeah, exactly.
Miles and miles.
We'll be constantly traveling, so it'll be like a tour. But like whenever we're in your city, we're like toppling a settlement.
Local warlords.
Coming through town, dude.
Left and right.
Snow Crash is really good, though. I'm really enjoying
Snow Crash. Yeah. What? How far into it are you? Have you met the motorcycle guy,
Raven?
Yes.
Yeah, I've met Raven.
Oh, he's so cool, dude. One of my favorite Neal Stephenson characters. I'm like, this guy's fucking awesome.
I knew he was going to be fucking like a player when they first introduced him, where he was like standing in the crowd outside that club and that he was like, you want some fucking Snow Crash? And I was like, this 7-foot tall man is going to be a problem. I was like, that is going to be an issue. I'm at the part right now where I believe YT is. So her mom did the polygraph test and they were asking her a bunch of questions. And then she shows up to like a Fed building and they try to arrest her. And she's like, nope. And she's escaping currently.
Yeah. Okay. So all right.
That's where I'm at right now.
Has he gotten? I can't remember. Has he done the an info dump about language yet?
Sumerians. So. Yeah. Love that part. Love that,
dude.
Part.
You're like, what's going on now? Like,
holy
awesome.
Shit, dude! And then there that scene where YT's
it's way too like. A little plausible. You're like, what?
Well, hold on a second. And then I really like the fact that like YT is this like 15-year-old girl or 16-year-old girl, and like since there's no laws anymore, the mafia is just like a conglomerate. They're like an actual like well-established business.
My favorite thing. Yes, that was like they have pizza delivery places.
Yeah, I was like, dude, oh my god.
My favorite thing was like the corpo environment that he manufactured. Yes, and, I love that.
And like,
I do think like. That's like canon. Like basically like cartels are going to have like companies in America and we'll like eat at cartel restaurants.
Yeah,
like
I'm not 100% kidding. Agree. Yeah. 100% agree. And like
yeah, brought to you by CJNG.
Yeah, right. Oh, okay.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. And I like the fact that like the leader of the mafia took like a liking to YT and was like, yeah, here's my dog tags. If you ever get in any trouble, just show someone these and they'll fuck off.
Such a cool idea.
I know. I was like, also,
those would totally work. Someone seeing those, like, wait, holy
dude, yeah. Right, dude,
holy
and like to have that power of being like, just show them these dog tags and they will fuck off. I assure you they will fuck off.
That's so cool.
Dude, hard, hard. And then there's that scene where she meets up with the dude who I think is like paralyzed and he's basically has melded himself to his car. And he drives around in his car by voice and shit like that. I was
so
like, dude,
cool.
What the fuck? I was like, that's crazy.
I was like, no one's ever really done that, like, body mod.
No,
level.
Yeah.
It's like,
I am a car. I am a whole car.
Yes.
He's got a whole refrigeration unit in that bitch. And then the entire time he's, like, driving his car, he's actually in the metaverse fucking just watching everything on screens.
I know, dude.
So cool.
And the metaverse is cool as fuck.
The metaverse is badass.
That metaverse would be amazing.
I would love that metaverse. Zuckerberg, if you make that metaverse, I'm in.
Yeah, that would be so fun. Especially if the only metaverse is one where they can't really have restrictions on what's in it, and that's just like going to be in places.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like it needs to be like a real place.
Like a,
you know?
Like a metaverse red light district where it's like,
yes,
you get
literally
whatever you want here. Yeah. Like,
that's so awesome. I love the idea of that.
I mean, in reality, there ain't no motherfucking way. Like, if the metaverse to that extent became a thing, there's no fucking way any government's going to be able to write laws for it. Like, you just you can't. It's impossible.
Nah.
You can't fucking do it.
I mean, and it's like, does it matter?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you have like some shit like Snow Crash going around, then it's like, maybe we should fucking crack down on that. But either
this may hold on. This may just be because of Discord. I hearing like the tiniest bit of like whisper at the end of every one of your noises. It's like,
I'm not hearing that with you.
You're not getting that on your monitor?
Yeah.
All right, then it's probably just Discord. I'm not going to worry about it.
It definitely just Discord. It sucks. Discord sucks.
Discord sucks. Yeah, it's
Discord
a real piece
does
of
suck.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm very much enjoying Snow Crash. So, like I said, I got 5 hours left.
Dude, I never thought I'd get you to read Neil Stephenson. Dude, he's so the king of the nerds, man. I kind of wonder. I think you would like Cryptonomicon. That one is cool because that's the one where it's about two stories. One is about this World War II mission to find, I think, Japanese gold, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And the attempt to crack the German Enigma. It's about that.
Okay.
And then the 1990 story is about them looking for that gold again. To back a cryptocurrency that they're going to make. And he wrote this in like the early 90s.
That sounds pretty cool.
And, oh, it's cool
that
as shit.
Fucking badass, dude.
It's cool as shit. But it's considered his like magnum opus. It's the king of the nerds book. It's like 1,000 pages.
Damn.
Detail rich. Tons of World War II history.
I was gonna say, in 1,000 pages, it better be detailed rich.
One of my favorite chapters Neil Stephenson has ever written is in that book, and it's dedicated to the main character eating a bowl of Captain Crunch.
No shit.
That's what the whole chapter
that's
is.
That's tight.
So funny.
I'm going to have to fucking gear up to read that.
I honestly think you'd like it.
It sounds awesome. Yeah, it sounds awesome, but long. I wonder, what's it called again?
Cryptonomicon.
How many hours?
It is famously like the king of the nerds books. If you look up like long nerd books, that's like number one they always list. You
let's
know?
See. Yeah. Cryptonomicon, 42 hours. Damn.
That's a decent chunk of time.
Yeah, that is hard science fiction. Hard. That's what it's.
I read the rate. I'm reading. Kindle gives me a pretty accurate reading estimate, I found. I'm reading a 800 page book right now. And it says it's going to take me about 20 to 22 hours.
I mean, you can knock them numbers down.
How long? Can you look up how long? Hold on. What was that?
You may also enjoy Whisper Sync for voice ready.
Swan Song. Can you look up how long that?
Swan Song? Yeah.
Hold on. The length of the audiobook.
Well, who's the author?
Robert McCammon.
Robert R. McCammon. It is exactly 34 hours.
Oh, wow. So I am reading a lot faster than an audiobook would take. Dang.
34 hours, yeah.
That, I mean, yeah, audiobooks give you advantages of being able to read at times where you couldn't read.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, there are very much a...
But that's slow for me. That would drive me nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can two times that speed and fucking...
That feels so weird to do on a book.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Someone was razzing me for that not too long ago, where they're like, oh, this, you listen to this book so slow. And I was like...
Dude, I think you're weird as shit if you're fast-forwarding media.
I can't.
Like, a podcast, I guess, yeah. Sure, whatever. A little weird, but whatever. A YouTube video, run it. You know, YouTube videos are way too inflated now anyway.
Yeah, but like a book?
Damn, a book? That's really odd.
Because, like, also, I don't want to, like... If there's at some point during the book I space out and I'm doing something, I don't want to have to be like, oh, I got to rewind 3 fucking minutes now because I, you know,
spaced out for
a couple seconds. So, yeah, I said I was weird for listening to it at normal speed. I was like, I think that's normal. I think most people
do that. Really weird to listen to it sped up. You know, I'm just like, now what do you do? I'm like, are you just trying to get this over with? Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Go ahead and write into the pod. Do you listen to your books at normal speed or do you listen to your books at fucking 2 times the speed?
Do you listen to the podcast at normal speed?
Yeah, because, like, again, a podcast, I could see you listening at 2 times the speed. Sure. Totally understand that.
You guys are totally obliterating our hilarious comedic timing. That's fine.
Yeah, that's okay. That's on you. As long as you still find it funny.
Plus, you make our rich, deep timbre of our voices sound high and, higher, and girly. Yeah. And that's weird.
And that is weird.
You're weird for that, homie.
You're super weird for that. But yeah, so I'm excited to see where Snow Crash goes.
It's so awesome. I think about the finale of that book, like, once a week.
Nice.
It's something, it's so cool, and there's a couple things that they do in it that I just, like, that I think about it a lot. It was awesome.
I mean, it has me hooked, because I'm like, what the fuck is Snow Crash? Like, why is it doing this to these people? Like, what is it fucking...
I think Cryptonomicon you'd be all over. Anathem is one... That's the one, I think I've told you about it. The first, like, 300 pages are, like, an in-depth description of this future monk monastery lifestyle.
Yeah, I think you have told me about that.
I don't know if you'd be about that. It's got twists, it's got turns, it's about things that you're interested in, but I won't tell you about. But that is what you got to get through to start. And that was the one that I never recommend to anybody. I'm like, nah, nobody's got the balls. 300
pages. I don't know. What's it called again?
I thought that shit's cool. That one's Anathem.
Anathem?
Don't read about it. Okay. It's got an awesome reveal.
I'm into that.
Book, like, I was like, you know, I'm reading it. I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
you know,
what's going
on
here?
Okay, we've been in the monastery for a while. Where's this going? And then... I'm like, what could this be, you know? And the reveal's awesome. So that's one book that I think's worth the build, for sure. But not for everybody. And it's not as interesting of some stuff as, like, well, I mean, some of his other books. It's not as detail-heavy like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm into that. I'm gonna.
But, I mean, you reading those, like, did you ever... We talked about Seven Eves. Man, you'd be all over Seven Eves, too. You might as well read it.
Seven Eves.
That's the one where the moon... gets hit by a thing and it starts to crumble and Earth has to send up as much stuff as they can into orbit because the moon will start to fall onto Earth and kill everybody.
Damn, that's crazy.
That book rocks. That's rocks. Crazy. Awesome. Awesome.
How do I bookmark? Fucking add to wishlist. Dude. There we go.
He's for nerds, man. I love Neal Stephenson.
Yeah.
And he writes good characters.
He does.
He's empathetic. He's interesting. He writes ladies okay. He's not bad.
He's
as
not
far
terrible.
As nerds go,
yeah.
he's fine.
But,
you know?
Yeah, he could be a lot worse.
He doesn't make me cringe worse. Actively.
No.
You know? Like, maybe he doesn't write, like, the most three-dimensional one or most interesting one. Or, you know, that's fine. As long as they're not, like, gross or mischaracterized or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah. I mean, for a dude who writes sci-fi books, he's doing a pretty okay writing lady characters.
I know, yeah. Seriously. I mean, Termination Shock, I thought the princess was awesome. That's,
yeah, she was great. No, she was phenomenal. I think he did a great job, you know, building and creating that character into someone who's, like...
interesting.
She wasn't like, oh, I'm royalty. She was like, fuck, you know, I'm royalty. I gotta do
that. Like, royalty's kind of cringe.
Yeah, drag. Yeah, exactly. Kind of cringe. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Who goes first this week?
Me.
You? Okay.
I'm positive of it.
Who'd you cover last week?
Last week, I covered Chevy Chase.
Oh yeah,
God, that guy was a dick.
Yeah, what
dude.
A dickhead, dude. Yeah,
he was
okay.
Just such a rotten soul,
a terrible fucking guy.
I'm like, dude, when I read that thing about Donald Glover being like, I could tell that, you know, his actions were rooted in like an appreciation of my talent. I was like, oh my God. Like, Chevy Chase didn't deserve to even be near
dude, yeah,
you, bro.
At
like,
all.
Like, Donald Glover now is like a modern great, and Chevy Chase never touched the levels that Donald Glover has already reached,
yeah.
You know? And that's not even including his fucking music, dude.
Dude, his music's so good.
So good.
So good.
How long have we been gabbing?
30 minutes.
30 minutes? 30? Zero? Okay. Start? Mine's kind of long,
yeah,
honestly.
Fuck it. Start. Let's go. Run it.
All right. Fuck it. Fuck it.
Fuck it.
So I'm covering the great Elizabeth Jane Cochran. She was born on May 5th, 1864, in Pennsylvania.
Nice.
Shout out. I represent that state
womp, womp, womp.
Outside of what is now Pittsburgh. She was the daughter of a mill and a landowner who married twice and had 15 children.
Damn.
Elizabeth, it was 10 with the first, 5 with the second. Elizabeth was his 13th child, third of the second wife. And when Elizabeth was 6, her father died, presumably from the stress of having 15 children in the mid-19th century.
Yeah, you don't say.
His death was sudden and without a will, so the family left the land because they couldn't afford to be on it. And the mother briefly remarried but divorced because he beat her, which is sad. As a young girl, she adored the color pink, wore it often, and it netted her the clever name. These kids, I don't know how they came up with this. Pink. They called her Nick Pink.
Really? We'll all be damned.
As she grew up, she decided that wasn't cool, so she distanced herself from the name and reputations, and for some reason added an E to the end of her name, because that's fancier.
Yeah, sometimes that's what you gotta do, reinvent yourself.
Yeah, she just go ahead and, she did that. So, at 25, she enrolled what is now called the Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Formerly known... Yeah, formerly known as the Indiana Normal School, which I thought was fucking
that's
hilarious. What?
I want to imagine it's some
a proud graduate of the Indiana Normal School.
It's a dude from Indiana who was just like super weird and but like super into Indiana, so he moved to Pennsylvania. Was like, I need people to know that this is a normal school, and
it's
I'm
normal.
Super jazzed
Indiana
about Indiana.
Normal
yeah.
School. So she dropped out of the Indiana Normal School after only a single term because she didn't have no money. In 1880, her mom moved the family to a small city that would eventually become part of Pittsburgh because two of her older brothers had already settled there.
Nice.
So she's struggling to find work to help support the family because she's a woman. Not because she sucks, but because society doesn't let women work, I should specify.
Yeah, he's probably...
If you're not familiar with that time. So when she comes across an article, she's fucking pissed off about being denied her rights because a lady, she comes across this article in the Pittsburgh Dispatch that was lamenting the inclusion of women in the workplace and asserted that women were good for two things, making baby and making house, and they don't need no education or career. In fact, it's deleterious to modern polite society. And that was standard convention at the time. She was kind of pissed off reading that. So she writes him a pretty fucking angry letter.
Hell, she
spices that shit up. Snarks it out. She put it under a pseudonym that she called the Lonely Orphan Girl. I don't know why she did that. I couldn't find any reason.
Nice.
The editor gets it and is like, damn, this bitch has got bars. So he puts an ad out in the paper and he's like, yo, whoever wrote me this really mean letter, come check out the place.
What's up, dude?
So she does. She gets it to her and he offers her a fucking job. He's like, you can write a rebuttal to that article and we'll publish it. So she goes home and writes her very first newspaper article titled The Girl Puzzle, and he likes it, so he offers her a job permanently to write under the name Nellie Bly, which was the name of a song by a famous Pittsburgh songwriter. Women commonly used male pen names at the time because they weren't respected.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So... Back then, a woman writer at a newspaper was supposed to write about how to cook, clean, or stuff. I can't believe I wrote this. Jesus. I said, I'm gonna try to say it. Or suck their husband's balls real good. But I don't know why I wrote it like that. But Nelly eschews the norms of the time by writing her second ever newspaper article titled Mad Marriages about how women were affected by divorce. And in it, and this was, you know, hugely inspired by experience with her mother. And then she argued for divorce reform, like, and stuff like that. You know, women shouldn't have to get beat just for the court to be like, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Fine. The articles that she wrote were really popular with women and encouraged her to write more daring, hard-hitting pieces, with a few about poor women working in the Pittsburgh bottle factories. These were not super popular with local businesses because they're like kind of blowing up our spot by exploiting all of this women labor. Yeah, bro.
You don't say.
So they started to threaten the newspaper that they would pull their advertising. So the paper's like, all right, you twisted their nuts enough. Take it easy. How about you go and do something nice like this little gardening story? And she was like, okay, here's your fucking gardening story and also my resignation, eat my balls. She was 21 years old at the time.
Damn.
So she's like, all right, I'm out. And he's like, dude, don't. Come on, work for us. She's like, I'm not gonna be here. And he's like, how about you be a foreign correspondent? And she's like, all right, that's pretty adventurous and cool. So she goes to Mexico as a foreign correspondent.
Nice.
There she spent 6 months reporting on the lives of Mexican citizens and the current political situation. In one of her reports, she protested the imprisonment of a journalist who had criticized the government of Mexico, which under the time was under the dictatorship of Porfirio Diaz. This guy was a bit of a dick. Standard dictatorship stuff. Standard. I mean, I don't even go into the details. Yeah, you get it. And but he got also the articles got his fucking attention, and she was threatened with her own imprisonment because this guy's like, fuck it, international incident. I don't give a motherfuck.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, dude, it's a lady. And the America would be like, oh, never mind. Yeah. So she fled Mexico as a result. But once safe in the U.S., she published a more full-throated criticisms of the dictatorship and its treatment of the people and the press. So once she was back, she got put on some bullshit again. They're like, how about you do theater and the arts? So in 1887, she leaves the Pittsburgh Dispatch for the great shiny beacon of New York City.
New York City!
Obviously, she was pretty much rejected for jobs, for being a filthy, good-for-nothing woman. She's there for 4 months running out of cash when she manages to work her way into meeting with Joseph Pulitzer.
Oh.
The Pulitzer.
And why does that name sound familiar?
Look, go ahead and look that dude up. He's hot as fuck, dude. He was a stunner back then. Yeah, I was like, damn. Oh, damn. But Joseph Pulitzer could write Andy look like that guy slayed.
Joseph Pulitzer could fucking Joseph Poole. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Pulitzer, I hardly even know her. So he owned the New York World newspaper. It was cool. I was just reading Southern Reconstruction or Black Reconstruction by W.E.B. Du Bois, and he mentioned that newspaper. I was like, oh, I know that newspaper is. That's crazy. So he liked this lady's gumption, chutzpah, huevos, and so her first assignment is to go undercover, feigning insanity, and to be committed to a woman's lunatic asylum, that's the word they used at the time, on what is now called Roosevelt Island, to investigate rumors of brutality and neglect. To really get into the role, she goes into a boarding house for women, stays up all night to cultivate the wide-eyed craziness we associate with the commonly hysterical women that were running around at the
rampant
time. And she starts pointing at other boarders and screaming, and she's like, they're crazy! And they're like, no, she's crazy. And that gets her enough attention that the police take her to the courthouse, where a absolutely qualified police officer, judge, and then doctor decide that she should be committed to Blackwell's Island.
Okay.
That's that. And I was like, how fucking hard was that? You know, like, do like a little crazy scream like an animal, and then say some really crazy shit like, I think women should be treated equally. And they're like, this bitch is out of her mind.
Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, my God. She goes, I want to vote for the president. And they're like, holy shit, she is crazy.
Lock her up.
So she goes there for 10 days, the newspaper eventually getting her out. I was so confused by the legal logistics of that. I was like,
how?
And they're like, what? They're like, that's ours. And they're like, oh,
okay, oh, sorry. Yeah, didn't know she belonged to a newspaper. Excuse me.
I was like, well, who?
It's like diplomatic immunity.
Yeah. So the stay itself was obviously horrible. The women were often subjected to ice cold baths of water that was reused and never replaced. They fed them bread and rancid butter and prunes and dirty water. And they jammed them together with about 1,600 other women who become very sick as a result of staying there. And some maybe actually could be mentally ill. So 1,600 women, insane, right? Turns out most of them were just immigrants.
Yeah.
They just couldn't speak English. That was... the cop hears Chinese. He's like, wow, this woman is insane.
I was like, some lady speaking Spanish. And like, it's the devil. She's got the devil inside of her.
Speaking tongues. Yeah. Get her out of here. There was a lot of discussion at the time. Like, a lot of the outrage about this article when it comes out is like, how could she have possibly fooled all these professionals? I was like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah, it didn't take much to be a doctor.
There's just immigrants there. Like, yeah,
there's regular people in there, bro.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about? Anybody could have. So she publishes a report on October 9th, 1887, that becomes a book called 10 Days in a Madhouse that made huge waves. It got a grand jury investigation going that she took part in. And it prompted immediate reforms due to public outcry. On top of that, Bly ushered in a kind of this new era of stunt gonzo journalism and lady writing as she became a national celebrity.
Hell yeah.
So she even used this clout to get an appointment to interview infamous lady serial killer Lizzie Holiday. It was funny, the article that I was reading about it called her allegedly insane, which, you know, fair enough, the standards at the time. But that woman did stab her asylum friend that she'd known for 20 years, like 200 times. Damn. So I was like, I don't know, she could be crazy.
Yeah, I bet also it's like you're put in a place like that for fucking, you know, for however long. Well,
she had
long.
Been killing her husbands for quite some time. Oh, okay. So, yeah.
All right.
Well, so she interviewed... Susan B. Anthony advocated for women's autonomy and at one point got a job making boxes for an extremely low wages. So, you know, to highlight the inequality at the time and the wage exploitation. The headline was called Nellie Bly Tells How It Feels to Be a White Slave.
Whoa.
I don't know about
Dicey,
that.
Bro. Yeah.
Calm down, I'm going to be honest.
It probably wasn't good, but I don't think it was slave conditions good, like bad, you know?
Yeah, I was like, no.
Yeah.
No. So she's got some real clout now, big dick on campus, and she pitches herself an idea to Mr. Pulitzer. And she says Jules Verne had published the book Around the World in 80 Days. To a great claim back in 1873. And Bly was like, let's do that. Let me do that. I'll go around the world and I'll write about it. So they're like, actually, that's an awesome idea. We're going to do that. And the newspaper funds her travels. She travels all over the world, travels the whole world.
Nice.
The newspaper has a win, like the when will Nellie come back? Like bet, you know, like the exact day. That a lot of people participated in. The reward was like a trip to Europe or something, which I thought was cool. And as she's traveling, Bly sends regular dispatches back as she travels the world. And she actually meets Jules Verne at one point, which I thought was kind of cool. I was like, that's kind of sweet, you know? Hey, I'm running it, man. Let's see how it goes.
That's good.
I will admit, reading some of her reports, she's a bit of a white dickhead at the time.
Yeah, you don't say?
Yeah, she has some pretty, like, it's like not even like liberal girl or like, you know, Christian missionary out of touch kind of stuff. It's like really like she calls Asian beggars so repulsive that instead of appealing to one's sympathy, they only succeed in arousing one's disgust.
Jesus Christ, dude, take it easy.
She compares Mexican men to hungry but well-bred dogs. I'm like, all right.
Good God.
That was a backhanded compliment, if we could even call it that.
Yeah.
She also makes grand claims like Chinamen are very indifferent about death, or Mexican lives are 1,000 times worse than slaves than they know it.
Oh.
And I was like, stop talking about slaves.
Yeah, you're stuck on this slave thing, and I need you to get off it.
It's really out of your element, Donnie.
Way out of your wheelhouse.
So, but, yeah, so, you know, It didn't age the best. Well, she's trying. She's doing her thing, you
know? She is, you know, obviously being a woman.
Lady of her time.
Yeah, exactly. Being a woman, she fucking experienced hardship strictly just because she was a woman at a time where women couldn't fucking do anything. But also,
and she traveled the world by herself, yeah, which is hard.
Which is very hard, especially as a woman. But she's also a white person in 1876, so... You know, you gotta take it with a grain of salt.
Not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad for being a white person in 1876. Not too bad. Yeah.
So she makes it back in 72 days, which made it a world record at the time.
Yeah, suck it, nerds.
That record was beaten only a few months later by a guy named George Train. And I was like, you dickhead.
You fucking asshole. You had the name and everything, my guy. Come on. Yeah.
I did end up going down a wiki rabbit hole on the fastest circumnavigation of the world, if you want to follow along with me in this.
Yeah.
The first record ever was in 1519, took 1,082 days, took 3 years to go around the world on a boat. And we're like, the world is round, gang. And down to a whopping 44 hours using only scheduled transportation in 1980.
Well, damn.
And that's not bad.
Damn, that's not bad at all.
Everything else after that was kind of a bullshit record, like a super fast Concorde specific mission to do it. But this guy just scheduled flights and whatever. Did it 44 fucking hours.
44 hours. That's a fucking damn.
That's crazy.
That is insane.
I was like, 500 years, we went down from 1,000 days to 2.
Yeah, that dude was like, 2 days ago, I was in fucking, you know, California, and
it's
then
crazy.
Traveled all around the world back in California.
And then I started reading about world voyages in balloons, and I was like, God, that'd be so fun.
Oh,
just
my God.
In a little pod, a little balloon above the world.
Floating around
the world.
I'd
just be staring out the window forever, dude.
Absolutely.
Couldn't get tired of that shit.
Could never get
serious?
Tired of it.
I love looking out the window driving. That thing would be amazing.
It's dangerous. I'm endangering people around me.
I'm paying zero attention to the road. The newspaper offered her no bonus for the huge increase in circulation that she offered for the newspaper, and so she left.
Yeah.
She did a circuit lecture and started taking care of her now deceased brother's wife and kids, which I thought was nice.
That's pretty cool.
Afterwards, she became a novelist, published 11 books, and was eventually convinced again to come back to work for the World Newspaper. In 1895, she married Robert Seaman, a late-century industrialist millionaire who was 73 years old, she being 31 at the time. Hell yeah, bitch, get that bag.
Yeah, get that bag.
He died 9 years later. Plan totally worked. She's 40 and a millionaire.
Amazing.
He actually died being struck by a horse and wagon as he crossed the street, which I was already like, God damn, they really sneak up on you like that?
Yeah, well, horse? He's in his 70s in the 1800s, so like...
Oh, he died. He would have been 82, actually, at the time.
Yeah, and it's the 1800s. That man was not moving fast.
Man, that guy was born in 1810. America's crazy. 35 years old when he was born.
They couldn't
and
have,
then
like...
he gets hit by a horse.
Yeah. He
gets hit by a horse... It said he died of a heart disease brought by his injuries a month later. And I was like, I just feel like the doctors just suck and just die real slow. I mean,
I think that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So leaving her in charge of the company, she now became one of the world's most successful women industrialists as her company made the 55-gallon oil drum. That was her company.
Can't imagine a time where the 55-gallon oil drum didn't exist.
Someone is like, I have an idea.
Yeah. How about we make this barrel bigger? You know what I'm saying? We need it bigger to fit more
oil. And you know what? The next barrel I make, it'll be the same size.
And just keep it
How about that?
How about that, dude?
So she's making a bunch of money on that. She also did have a patent for a couple of her own devices that, you know, weren't like revolutionary, but you know, she did her own stuff. She was working on it. She ran the company well, offered health benefits, recreational facilities, was nice to her employees, and she was well liked. And unfortunately, she was not particularly adept of understanding the financials. Her employees embezzled enough money to ruin the company.
Nice.
I was like, come on, guys. Yeah. You had a good thing going.
Yeah.
So she went back to reporting.
Okay.
Still a millionaire, though. There she shifted her focus to women's suffrage. A famous article that came out by her at the time was called Suffragists Are Men's Superiors. And in it, she predicted that women would be allowed to vote before 1920, which she was correct about. Later, she became the first woman to visit the war zone between Austria and Serbia in World War I, which made her the first woman's war correspondent.
Damn.
Which is cool as fuck.
That's crazy.
And she was arrested at one point for being mistaken for a British spy. She came back, picked up a column to help women, just with advice and actually financially and materially supporting them. And after this eventful, fulfilling life, Nellie Bly died from the touch of consumption in 1922 at the ripe old age of 57.
Damn, the consumption, man, it'll get you.
It'll get you.
It will get you.
Man, it would be really good if we could cure that.
Yeah.
said everybody all the time.
All the time,
until we
yeah.
made penicillin. But yeah, that's it. That's Nellie Bly. She made a difference. She wasn't like...
For a white person in the 1800s, she did great.
Oh, yeah.
She did great.
Oh, man. Yeah, she was wonderful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will give her that. She did pretty solid. She didn't just neglect everybody once she got her riches and whatever.
Exactly.
And she really tried and maintained her. She also was, you know, legendary journalist for that regard.
And she continued doing baller shit even after her company went under, which was fucking pretty cool. Being the first, like, you know, war correspondent, like woman
that's
war
nuts.
Correspondent is insane. Absolutely fucking
and
insane.
And World War I, too. Jesus Christ.
That's brutal. That's brutal right there. I'm going to tell you what now. But yeah, so mine's not that cool. Mine's a bit of a bummer, actually.
Yours sounds like a bum skis.
I'm going to go ahead and give a little warning, Steen. There is some violence to be had in this story. It is ultra violent. I say ultra violent, like, well, okay.
A little bit of ultra violence.
Yeah, it's pretty violent. So I'm just going to go ahead and give you a little TW at the beginning, but,
how would this rate in our episodes?
Do like, what?
How would this rate among our episodes in terms of like most least violent? Like top five?
I would say top five. It's definitely not top three, but it's like top five. I don't know. We usually don't cover like super violent stuff.
We try to avoid it.
We do.
Sun Jim Gang was probably one of the most violent.
Yeah. And like the Mary Vincent story was super violent. Like, we really don't try to, we try not to cover stuff that's super violent.
Not a lot of
violent.
Jokes to be made about that kind
of
stuff.
You don't say. It's hard to make
not the right
jokes.
Vibe.
Yeah. So obviously it's my turn to cover the bad guy, and I'm covering a man who's been described as the real life Dexter. And if you are uncultured swine, Dexter was a show where Michael C. Hall played a serial killer who was also fucking fed. He was a blood spatter analyst, and basically his whole thing is he would just go kill other serial killers. Very quirky. So now
did you watch Dexter?
Yeah, I watched Dexter.
Was it good?
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, they did a good job. I didn't watch the new
isn't
ones.
It, like, famous for having like one of the worst endings or seasons ever, or
is
some
it?
Shit. Yeah, there's like I've always seen the IMDb chart where it's like, bing, 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 boom, like the last season or something. Like
that wouldn't surprise me. Really I don't remember shit from the last season, so that could
maybe
tell
you
something.
Didn't even watch it.
That's true. I did watch the show.
I think the ending sucks so hard, you think you'd remember it.
You know, fair. Probably didn't even watch the ending. Me personally, I don't really think he's. Could be considered the real life Dexter, but like the tie in those fucking
we are way too quick to throw that
loose
shit around.
Butthole loose yeah, yeah loose butthole it's loose butthole
yeah very so, loose yeah
like I said, just a heads up, this story has some extreme violence, so I'm gonna give you a little warning on that one. So Pedro Rodriguez Filho was born in Brazil in 1954. Right off the jump, not off to a great start. He was born, apparently born. Oh, I didn't mean because he was born in Brazil. Oh, I didn't mean that.
Like, I mean, yeah, I guess.
But yeah, in the 50s, yeah.
I was like, I wouldn't choose to be born in Brazil in the 50s.
No, absolutely not. He was born with supposedly a fractured skull, which was the result of his dad, you know, beating the shit out of his mom while she was pregnant. Not the most chill, stable environment. So Pedro's thirst for blood begins at around the age of 13.
Pretty average 50s dad experience. Yeah,
true,
say.
Very true. Yes,
very average.
So his thirst for blood starts at the age of 13. Apparently, he had stolen his cousin's horse, and his cousin beat the shit out of him for it and basically humiliated Pedro in front of everyone. And Pedro was like, not cool with that, which fair. Yeah, that's you stole.
You can't be a horse stealer.
Cannot be a horse thief. No. So Pedro,
horse rustling?
Not in these parts.
Mm-mm. Not in these neighborhoods.
Pedro, not liking that at all. So when him and his cousin were working in a sugarcane factory together, Pedro pushes his cousin into the sugarcane press. Luckily for his cousin, it didn't kill him, but it did take his arm. So he pushed him and his cousin put his hand out and his arm got caught in the fucking machine.
The fact that Pedro's story does not end there is
crazy, right? Crazy.
Like, if you push my arm into a machine, I don't care our relation, I don't care our history, I don't care the law, I will kill
you. I'm gonna kill you, yeah.
Simply at some point, you will die.
It gets much worse. So his cousin's arm gets stuck in the machine, and he survives, though, and Pedro's arrested, but ultimately he's not charged or, like, you know, convicted of anything, but he is forced to clean the blood and arm bits out of the heavy machinery. That's, like, his punishment, which apparently takes him a long time.
That would suck. Mess.
Yeah, that would be a mess, yeah. What does a sugarcane press look like?
I got it. You know what I mean? I get it.
I want to see what
I'm sure it's got gears.
That looks gnarly.
Like, it would be made to, if you put your arm in, it would be to shred it to pieces.
It looks like it's made to crush arms. It's like this is its job.
Yeah.
Someone made this to crush an arm, and they're like, oh, sugar cane. Okay. Fast forward a little bit, Pedro is at the ripe old age of 14 years old when his father, who was working as a security guard at the local school, is fired. So apparently, Pedro's father had been accused of stealing food from the school's kitchen, and Jesus, oh fuck, hold on, I totally, oh shit, oh my god, we're in dire straits. I accidentally unplugged my laptop thinking I unplugged something else, and your battery's about to die. Yeah. Let me make sure that's good. Hold on one second. We got a little bit of technical difficulties here. That ain't no problem. I think we're good. Are we plugged in? We plugged in, little guy? I can't see fucking shit out of this. Yeah, we're plugged in. Okay, cool. if it just dies, that's what happened, and then we'll pick it back up. But so his dad is fired from his job as a security guard. Apparently, he's been accused of stealing food from the school's kitchen. Because of this, you know, the fight, you get shit canned. So Pedro's father is furious. He says that it wasn't him who was stealing the food, but it was another security guard that also worked at the school. So Pedro is like, damn, that's tough. Let me talk to that dude real quick. Maybe I can reason with him. So he takes his little 14-year-old self over to the deputy mayor of Santa Rita's office, who is in charge of doing the hiring and firing at the school. And when he meets with this deputy mayor, and he shoots him directly in the face with a shotgun. So after he kills that dude,
he got to walk all the way up to that guy with a shotgun.
Yeah, crazy, right? I would like to think that it's like a smaller shot. I don't know. If I see a kid walking up to me with a shotgun, we're not friends. I'm like, I'm immediately drawing.
Yeah. I'm not gonna have questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Go away.
So after killing the deputy mayor, he goes and tracks down that security guard whose father said was the one stealing the food, and he kills that dude as well. Same fate.
Oh.
So, 14 years old. This is him when he's 14. So he's
still alive. Oh,
after this, he goes on the run and ends up hiding out in the greater Sao Paulo area, where he really starts growing into his life as a criminal. Pedro spends his time robbing known drug dens and trap houses. He kills any drug dealer who happens to be inside. Pedro did this so often, he became kind of a local celebrity. Is that not the right word? Vigilante, maybe? Like, I don't know.
Kind of like a Punisher Batman situation. Yeah.
So
Sao Paulo, Brazil is not a safe place.
No, not at all.
It's kinda
That dude being there should tell you that. For him to go hide out there. But so he earns himself the nickname Pedrino Matador, which means little Petey killer. And so while he's out dealing his street justice, he meets a girl by the name of Maria Aperdesia Olympia, which is a fucking badass name. So they fall ass over tea kettles for each other, and not long after they meet, they shack up. So they're living life, deeply in love. You know, they're living with each other, and not long after, Maria becomes pregnant with Pedro's child. So at this point in time, Pedro's 18 years old, and One day, he comes home to find Maria had been brutally murdered in their home. Apparently, the people who killed her also wrote, "We will get you" in blood on the wall. And Pedro's like, "Word? Okay. All right.
Okay.
So, you know, he's kind of by definition not the guy you want to fuck with. So he's like, cool. We're going to figure out who did that. And he makes it his fucking mission to get his revenge. So he has, at this point in time in his life, he has a shitload of enemies. So it really could have just fucking been anyone. And it's hard to pinpoint.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint who did the killing. So that did not stop him from kicking in doors of any person he believed would have information and would leave him to Maria's killer. So that's what he spends his time doing. He goes, if he gets a tip that this person might know who killed Maria, he kicks in the doors and he tortures them. And so Pedro spends the next year torturing information out of anyone he could get his hands on, and he finally gets what he's looking for. So the man responsible for the death of his beloved was a guy, a local, you know, like crime kingpin who went by the name China. So he was also just happened to be an enemy of Pedro, obviously. And Pedro, along with two other men, find China at a wedding party and they ambush him. Pedro shoots China in the face, and then him and the two men he came with kill seven more people in the wedding party.
God damn.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, right?
This guy is a slaughterer.
Yeah, it gets worse. So in 1973, at the age of 19, Pedro is arrested and charged with a whopping 18 counts of murder. Police are probably like, fucking Jesus Christ, we finally got this guy. Because the entire time that he's like murdering these people, he's like talking to like reporters and shit. Like he was like a very like John Gotti type of dude. He like really liked being in the limelight. So
it's like really a different time.
Yeah, really a different
time. That's a really different time. We don't have anything like that in America at all.
Not anymore.
Like, I mean, yeah. No, no one.
Not since the Gotti days. Like, I mean, the only thing really you could compare it to is like gang members who become, you know, famous rappers.
Channel 5 had some interviews with the two of the dudes who supply most of the fentanyl in Philly. Like, damn. Most of it. They got all the way up to meeting those dudes.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. That's insane.
I always wondered how you like get how like Vice does that, where they're just like, just start asking around, well, I guess.
Because, I mean, the thing is, he's met a lot of dudes like this. I'm trying to remember the other one he met. He met a bunch of like criminal carjack dudes, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
In San Francisco. But in Oakland and that shit. And I think you just kind of get the rep of like, hey, I work with those people and they didn't like go to jail after.
Yeah, so they didn't get arrested.
You show, hey, look, I met this dude, and they're like, all right,
I'm not
cool,
a fucking fed, obviously.
Dude. You gotta watch the Philly video. Was like, you gotta watch it.
I'll have to check it out. So, Pedro, it was talking to reporters and shit. Real ham for the cameras. He loves being in the press. He claims he ain't ever killed a man who didn't deserve it, and he lives by this moral code of killing. So, when he's arrested, police like, you're being charged. So he gets arrested, and if at any point the police were like, I wonder if he's actually innocent. They probably saw the tattoo on his arm that's literally said, quote, "I kill for pleasure," and we're like, nah, dude's not fucking. One said, "I kill for love" with Maria's name, and the other one said, "I kill for pleasure."
His defense lawyer is like, we're going to get you a long
So when they while arrested, they're like, all right, you're being charged with the murder of 18 people. And Pedro was like, hold the fuck on. Excuse me? I've actually killed 100 people. So go ahead and jot that down.
He's like, excuse me?
Yeah, how dare you?
You think I'm some fucking 10-killing ass bitch?
Some amateur? So ultimately, he's sentenced to 126 years in prison, which really doesn't mean a fucking thing, because at the time in Brazil, the max sentence someone can serve is 30 years. So he's convicted. The judge is like, all right, you little rapscallion, don't do any more murders. And they toss Pedro in the paddy wagon with a bunch of other prisoners, and they take him down to the big house. When they arrive, they open the back door to find that Pedro has killed one of the inmates that he was being transported with. Apparently the dude was, you know, a convicted rapist, and Pedro...
Hey, Bill, was this feller dead? Yeah. Put him in here?
Yeah.
Fuck.
So apparently the guy was a convicted rapist.
Everybody else in the fucking wagon had to be in there while he killed
watch
him.
That dude get fucking murdered, yeah.
They're like, I'm not gonna say shit.
Yeah, fuck no. The guy being a convicted rapist, Pedro was like, he deserves it, and kills him. So, the fun doesn't stop there, though. Once he's actually behind bars, he continues killing. Sticking to his, quote, moral code, he only murders pedophiles, rapists, and men who have harmed women and children. And as righteous as that sounds, he didn't just kill bad people. Like, he says
this guy's right? Dude, like, yeah, no way. Yeah,
and like, you know, he says he lived by this moral code, but, like, he talked about killing... He basically killed anyone who inconvenienced him. He talked about killing a cellmate who he murdered because they were a loud snorer. So, he also, at the time, the prison had a cell block strictly to house transgender inmates, and he made his way to that cell block and murdered 16 of them. So, like, he's not a fucking righteous, like,
yeah,
God Almighty. Yeah, he's just a piece of shit.
He's a murderer.
Yeah, a fucking murderer. So, a year into his sentence, he gets word that his abusive father has murdered his mother. Pedro is obviously furious, and it kicks his fucking bloodthirst straight into overdrive, as I can imagine. But there isn't much he can do about it because he is, you know, behind bars. And like a fucking divine intervention, his dear old dad ends up at the same fucking prison as he does. Same fucking prison, but his dad gets put in a different cell block. So,
imagine finding out that your kid is there.
Like, yeah. Ooh. The kid that ran away at 14 because he shot two people in the face with a shotgun. So, his dad, though, is being housed in a different cell block. So... Pedro decides to ambush a prison guard, takes his gun, he herds all the other guards into a locked room, and he merrily strolls his fucking way into an entirely different cell block where his dad's being held, stabs him 22 fucking times, and then, trigger warning, cuts his fucking heart out and takes a bite out of it and spits it on his body. Yeah, dude. So...
Imagine being the detective who shows up on that case, like, and you're like,
what the fuck? Yeah.
Hey, why did he do all this?
Yeah, so Pedro ends up getting kicked around to 9 different prisons because they're like, we don't know what the fuck to do with him. He's a goddamn psychopath. And he's eventually placed in solitary confinement for just about 10 years. And he gets put back in gin around 2002 when he's about to be released. So he ends up only serving 34 years. At his release date, his victim count was around 71. And they, like, bumped his sentence up to 400 years. But, you know, with Brazil's penal laws,
whatever.
He only served 34.
Okay.
So he gets released in 2007. He's 54 years old. And they just fucking turn him loose. But luckily, his freedom didn't last long. He gets picked up again by the 5-0. And for a legal possession of firearm and for also a prison riot he was a part of during his stint in the Slammer. But this second round of incarceration goes completely different. He does not kill anybody. He's kind of turned a new leaf. He's like, I'm just going to put my head down. I'm going to do my time. I'm going to get the fuck out of here. So he's released in 2018 on good behavior. Yeah. So once he's released...
Good behavior!
Once he's released, 64-year-old Pedro starts his own YouTube channel, and he gains, like, hundreds of thousands of followers.
I'm all about... I don't think... Everyone technically should have a second chance. Yeah. I really do believe that. There's the sentence, they serve it, they get a second chance. I think there should be a cutoff for that when you kill, I don't know... 10 people?
Yeah, that's being generous. That's so generous. So generous. Yeah.
So I think it's one of those things. I don't think he should be walking in the streets.
No, I agree.
Ever again.
It's one of the things of like, yeah, he killed a bunch of pedophiles, which fuck. Yeah, I get it. But also, it's like he killed a bunch of people who like didn't have anything to, who were just like serving their time or whatever. So when he gets out at 64 years old, he ends up starting a YouTube channel. He gains hundreds of thousands of followers. He talks about his life story. He encourages people not to turn out like he did, to turn away. He encourages like young kids, teenagers, to not take up a life of crime. And he all around, you know, for what it's worth, seems like a completely different person. But
okay,
in March of 2023, Pedro is lounging on his front porch outside of his house when a car pulls up and a group of masked men exit the vehicle and ambush him. They light him the fuck up with machine guns and slit his throat and leave him there to die. And he fucking dies. Yeah.
Absolutely fair enough.
Honestly, yeah. I mean,
I'm positive he deserved it.
I would be fucking so surprised if that man lived and died of old age. I was like, not a single person came back for you out of all those people you killed.
He was that thorough.
Dude, yeah. You know, like, oh, fuck no. He was not Dexter.
That guy's got
thorough.
Beefs all over town.
All over the place, dude. All over the fucking place.
Yeah.
But that is.
I feel like he was like reading the newspaper, fucking feet out, right? He sees the car pull up, and he's just like,
"Yep."
He's like folding it.
Yeah, folds the newspaper. He just like sits there. He's like, "Go ahead."
Yeah. Oh, he's getting riddled. Yeah.
He's like, "I'm surprised it took you this long. I'm gonna be honest with you. Yeah. You guys should have been here ages ago." But yeah, that is the story of Pedro Rodriguez Filho, the
wow, he was a piece of garbage.
Yeah, dude, he was fucking.
I think he might
brutal.
I think this is a spicy episode.
Yeah, I think this is a spicy episode.
Yeah, I don't think Nelly Bly did enough good to make up
for the 70 people Pedro.
God.
Yeah, that dude was a fucking piece of shit.
It's like, I don't really care if you murder a drug dealer. Like, why are you killing drug dealers?
Yeah, for
you
real.
Know, maybe they did something bad, but like, if it was just selling drugs, then like.
Whatever. Like, they're trying to make money.
Batman, go easy.
Yeah,
on
take
him,
it
you know?
Fucking easy, bud.
He's just trying to feed his daughter.
Yeah, no shit. But yeah, he was not a good man. Not a good man.
No, horrible. I have the worst. Way less murdery dickheads.
Yeah, when I was writing this story, I was like, this is more murder than we've probably covered in the entire podcast. I think
this guy's put some bodies down.
Yeah, this dude is like the you know, like I said, the most murder we've ever covered on the podcast was that one guy. So, I mean, as far as murder goes, I don't think we're ever going to top that. So you guys are safe. You got any wrecks?
Man, I don't know. Nah. No. Not really. I mean, I don't know. I'm rewatching Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and it's so good. And if you guys never ever got around to seeing it, you should check it out.
I watched
it's
a couple
very,
episodes,
very funny.
But I'm gonna go back and rewatch.
The thing is,
I rewatch it.
It's like probably 4 jokes a minute,
really?
For the whole show,
damn.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's just constantly boom, 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 boom,
bam,
like
fire them out.
And some jokes will have like 3 jokes in them.
God damn!
And it's a lot of like references,
it's a layered
like,
joke.
You really gotta know some shit. Like they'll make like an author reference, but then like a specific book of that author reference. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, it's a really smart show. I love Tina Fey.
Oh yeah,
and if you've never got around to watching it, I think you maybe like it.
Okay, well I'm gonna have to. I don't remember anything about it. I watched like the first couple episodes and that was it. So I'll go and rewatch it. But yeah, go watch Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I mean,
what's yours?
I'm reading Snow Crash, so you should read Snow Crash too.
Dude, Snow Crash
it's
rocks.
Good. If you like sci-fi shit, which like I feel like you know you guys know me at this point. I read a lot of fucking sci-fi. So you should, if you like sci-fi and like dystopian fucking future worlds. I mean, as Goose said, this is the book that like created the cyberpunk. You know. Fucking genre.
The metaverse,
dude. Yeah.
And also just message us if you guys want us to do a book club book again.
Yeah, if you want us to do a book club book, let us know what you want to read and we'll fucking do it again. The book club was super fun. I think we had a good time doing that. I liked everybody that followed along. I appreciate you. You know, if that's not something you're into, that's fine. But if you guys want another book club book, fucking hit us up. Let us know. You can hit us up on the Snacks Packs Podcast Instagram at Snacks Packs Podcast. Or just like send us pictures of your pets or memes or whatever you want to do. We don't care.
Yeah, don't fuck care. It. Yeah, you guys do send us a lot of memes. It's nice.
Which is awesome. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, keep it up.
But yeah, we'll see you guys next week. Be safe. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Love you so much. Bye-bye.